Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I am Benjamin R. Harrison, one half of your hosting team for the evening.
I'm the other half, Adam Pranica. I often introduce myself as the other half.
Yeah, oh yeah, because you're married.
Right.
What's that like?
It's pretty great, dude.
Yeah. I recommend it.
Yeah.
It's awesome to have, like, a teammate who's definitely on your side.
When you're as big of a fuck-up as I am, it is really nice to have someone in your corner who can forgive that on the regular.
You're not really a fuck-up. I mean, we both have tricky careers to be in, and I think we're both pretty successful, relatively speaking, in those careers. But our wives both have, like, super serious careers.
Yeah. Yeah, they are seriously successful, and we are, like, almost a joke successful.
Right. Like, it's easy to mistake what we do for kid stuff, and they are, like, grown-ups with grown-up jobs and responsibilities and stuff.
I feel like many of my conversations about my career and about this show, not just with my wife, but just with friends and associates... are often just trying to make the case that it's not a joke. No, seriously, sometimes I'll go a week or 2 weeks without working. And sometimes I will work 4 weeks in a row. Like,
yeah.
That's what my life is like. And that is not a joke.
Yeah, well, and the days when you're not working can sometimes be really, like, upsetting in a weird way because you're like, God, like, is this it? Are we done? Like, do I need to go get a Joe job and give up on my dreams? My friend Wayne, who is also in the freelance film biz, he's a gaffer, invited me to the beach one Tuesday last summer. And we were, like, out there on the beach, and I was like, I feel like I'm not doing the right thing right now. He's like, listen, man. On the days when you're not working, like, obviously you should be working on your business, but think about all the fucking weekends you've worked.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. He's like, you earned this. You earned this, buddy.
There's a strange amount of, when you're a freelancer, like that Stockholm syndrome of, if I'm not working right now, then it's wasting time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of Stockholm syndrome, I think we have an episode that is... tangentially associated with that subject, don't we?
That is true.
It's part two of the Slickback trilogy, a trilogy that we have come up with. Doesn't actually exist at all. You know how TNG, like, comes out with special box sets, like, here's all the Borg episodes, here's all the Q episodes. The Slickback trilogy does not exist.
Who's buying that? Yeah. Yeah, the Slickback trilogy. Well, maybe they'll ask us to curate, like if they ever do, like, a Criterion release curated by Ben and Adam.
I would love to see the Criterion box art for our podcast. The thing is, Ben, I can't just throw away a line like that because someone's going to make it.
Yeah.
We have had some viewers putting in work lately.
Yeah, man.
For the laughs. And it's been good.
Yeah. I think we should probably call out this one that we were both blown away by today. Somebody went and animated Picosby. And they came up with like a Starfleet-themed Cosby sweater and put Cosby in the Cosby house on the view screen and then just animated, like perfect lip sync, animated Picosby to a clip from our show. And then like whenever we're laughing at our own stupid joke, they cut in like outtakes from TNG of like, you know,
gag
Michael Dorn
stuff.
like busting up because a line is so funny. Oh my God, it's like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
We appreciate all of the stuff that our viewers have made, but when people have the temerity to submit a video to us directly, I think I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Pretty awesome.
Well, should we get into the ep, Adam?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go over season 4, episode 4. It's part 2 of the Slickback trilogy, Suddenly Human.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So, you got a Talarian craft that has distress signaled. And if there's ever a distress signal, the Enterprise is Johnny on the spot. They're like picking up feeble life signs from this craft, but they're a little on edge because
it was a common tactic of the Talarians to abandon their observation craft, rig them to self-destruct.
And issue a general distress call. Yes, Mr. Data, I know.
They have a very perfunctory conversation about the risks involved of beaming over.
Yeah.
And in about 10 seconds, they're like, yeah, it's worth it to just go check this out. If there was ever a time to reinstitute the beam the grass over under the feet of the people,
yeah,
like, why not just beam over a big part of this ship and remove the risk altogether?
Or beam not like one of the 4 or 5 main non-Picard characters over to the...
Yeah, beam over the B team.
Yeah. They beam over and there are a bunch of teens. And they've all got, you know, varying amounts of ground beef on their face. And they all have some pretty intense top of head meatloaf as well. Like, and I guess the ground beef is meant to look like radiation burns, but the meatloaf is their special alien meatloaf.
I think they're getting a little weird with the loaf
in
this episode and this alien, because usually there's a fair amount of symmetry involved with the loaf. But this is definitely asymmetrical loaf on these Talarians.
Yeah, and it kind of looks like they have like scrotum sacs on the back of their heads.
They look a little cysty, don't they?
It's like male pattern baldness that transitions toward the back into scrotum material.
Yeah, I might want to comb that over.
Yeah. I know that that's like what everybody looks like on your planet, but that shit, like, be a little discreet, okay?
Do you have to powder that part of your neck?
Yeah, you talk up the back of the dome.
Gotta do it. Gotta hit the back of your neck before you go to work.
Well, especially in the summer months. Come on.
Yeah.
You don't want swamp head.
You work in that hot engineering section. It's a real problem.
Mm-hmm. That's how you get ground beef, dude.
Yeah.
Talk up.
Gross.
They're in a bad shape, but there's one with like a helmet on, and you know, Crusher turns to Riker and is like,
"This boy, he's human.
I've checked the back of his neck, and there are no balls there."
No nubbins, no balls.
Nope.
They get the kids over, and they beam them all to six bay, and most of them are pretty fucked up, but the human is in decent shape. And his hair is not as slicked back as I remembered.
Yeah, what it is more, I think, might be just that peak 90s hair that's parted straight down the middle.
Yeah.
And we should probably complete the look a little bit. Like, he's got wedge hair, like blonde, ear-length wedge hair. He's got leather gloves that he never wants to take off. And he's wearing a vest of bratwurst.
Charlie Murphy's cooking Johnsonville fried! Johnsonville fried! Johnsonville
mm-hmm.
fried!
Yeah, this is like if a Klingon decided to make a garment out of summer sausage.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, like the summer sausage log that you find at a shopping mall.
Yeah.
Look, Halloween's coming up, Ben. Mm-hmm. That's a very cost-effective costume to wear to your Halloween parties.
Right, and think about how popular you'll be with your friends' dogs when you go over to their house.
No, I don't need any snacks, actually. I brought my own.
So, yeah, they're all pretty cooked. And the human who goes by Jono is sitting, like, stoically. And when they try and, like, interact with him, he kicks off this group whimpering.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Where they whine at the top of their pre-voice-changed lungs.
It's as annoying as a car alarm. I fucking hate it.
Yeah. It's such a weird choice, because they're like, they're supposed to be this kind of, like, martial people. Like, they're supposed to be sort of, like, a shittier Klingon type of race, where they're incredibly brutal to their enemies, and their brutality is so famous that for a lot of the episode they're concerned about the possibility that Jono's adoptive parents abused him as a child. And yet when they are upset, they make the banar, the morning. And it sounds like my dog when he's whining that I'm upstairs podcasting and not downstairs petting him.
Yeah.
I know that's super annoying because people write in and say, hey, it's really annoying when your dog whines on the podcast.
That really goes over well when you email a stranger to tell them how much you don't like their dog. That's good. That's a good intro.
Yeah. There's a pretty funny scene when Picard, like, comes into Six Bay to check out these alien survivors. And
please, may I have your attention?
And to try and get them to stop, he starts, like, clapping his hands.
Please, may I have your attention?
Which is like what you would do with a puppy, right?
Stop it!
Well, that's better.
We've got to establish right away how awkward Picard is around kids.
Yeah.
Like, he is just useless. He will negotiate treaties against aliens who hate each other, but a human child, oh boy.
Yeah, he clams right up. So yeah, this turns out to be a real space alien Gonzalez story.
Most of our references are like late 90s, early 2000s pop culture, right?
Yeah.
So Picard's in Six Bay, and he's doing a bunch of clapping, turning off the car alarm. He's, like, hitting the clicker a bunch of times in the grocery store parking lot. He's a little bit embarrassed about it. And he's like, hey, couldn't help but notice that you're human, and the rest of these kids you're with have loaf. What's up with that?
Yeah, where's your loaf, dude?
And it's like this kid hasn't ever looked into a mirror because he's like, no, man, I'm Talarian. These are my guys, and we were out there on a mission.
Yeah.
Feels like all Picard has to do is hold up a floor length, and the show is over. Like, roll the credits. But unfortunately, we have about 35 more minutes of this one, so we got to get into some exposition.
Yeah, so it turns out that Jono is from a family last name Rosa that has a very tragic family history. His parents were killed by Talarians in some long over skirmish or war, and other members of the family have also bought the farm under, relatively speaking, more or less tragic circumstances. His only surviving relative is a blue-haired old admiral who we'll meet a little bit later.
Admiral Werthers?
Yeah. When she FaceTimes up, there's definitely in soft focus in the foreground a bowl of hard candies that have all stuck to each other. But yeah, they're like, oh fuck, like this kid has, you know, he's like some Federation royalty, it turns out, like one of the bigwigs back in San Francisco has a claim to this guy, so we can't just give him back to the Talarians. And
it's a little bit Saving Private Ryan-y, isn't it?
In what way?
in that he's like the last surviving member of his family that hasn't been killed out in the field.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that Picard looks a little bit like Vin Diesel. Okay.
No, that wasn't where I was going with that. I had to, man, that pause was really to figure out if you weren't bullshitting me about Vin Diesel being in that movie. And then I was like, holy shit, he totally was.
He totally was. That's how he got his start.
Yeah.
That was, I think that's how he like broke out.
Yeah.
It wasn't his breakdancing video.
Unfortunately not.
You know about his breakdancing video, right?
Well, it's the video that got me to stop making my own breakdancing video in order to become famous myself.
Okay, fair
enough.
And
instead pivot into trying to get cast into Steven Spielberg movies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way. Well, they have some time to kill before the Talarians show up and collect their wounded survivors. But this kid is like, you know, they're like, what are we going to do with him? And he's demonstrated himself to be like stridently sexist. So none of the times that women have attempted to like talk to him or ask him to do something have gone over well at all. And like the only person he's demonstrated even a modicum of respect for is Captain Picard, because people say captain around him. And like he won't take off his gloves because he doesn't want to touch aliens. And they're like, dude, we're not aliens. Those are the aliens. You see the ball sacks on the back of their heads? Trust me, those are the aliens.
Do you think Jono's sexism is an example of the show gap-girling the sexism a little bit? Like, look at how sexist Jono is. Like, there's no way the show itself is sexist in its depiction of Counselor Troy at all, right?
Yeah, definitely not. I think that that's a good theory, and maybe is fully proven by the scene that Jono has with Worf, because Jono has like a grudging respect for Worf because he's from another warrior race, but he initially is like, how did the humans capture you? And
right.
And then Worf has to like break it down to him like,
you are human. And among humans, females can achieve anything the males can.
Even the terminology in that scene like exposes the problems with the way this show treats women. Because like Worf is like, in among humans, women are allowed to do as much as men are allowed to, or something like that. It's like men have permitted women to be equals.
Yeah.
Not like women just are equals. Like, they entertain women's silly fantasies that they are part of society. I don't personally cotton to these notions, but here we are.
Look around the bridge. I surround myself with these women. As long as they wear the low-cut dresses, everything's fine.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody, believe me. That was sort of like Worf Trump.
It's a little bit Twarf.
Can somebody Photoshop Trump hair onto Worf?
So it becomes clear to everyone, except for Picard, that Jono really looks up to him. A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And is really the only one who's able to have any sort of communication with him whatsoever, because whenever anyone else talks to Jono, it goes like it goes with Worf, which just leaves him doing the car alarm on his bed.
Yeah. So they have a little McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
About this whole shit. And it is decided that Picard is going to be daddy for Jono during the next few days as they wait for the Talarians to show up. And, you know, Picard is fucking flipping out about this. Like, not enthusiastic at all.
Oh, no, Counselor. I don't think so.
Not enthusiastic is, like, the Borg incident of descriptions for how he feels about this.
Yeah.
He almost breaks character. He's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. At first, as he deals with Jono, it's so stiff. It's like, it's very funny. You know, he'll walk in and Jono will be like doing his crazy puppy whimper, and Picard will have to ask him, as captain of the Starship Enterprise, I ask you not to do that sound.
Stop it!
The movie preview for this episode is Captain Picard gets a college roommate that's crazy.
Yeah.
What happens when we stick Captain Picard with a kid who really likes jam bands, plays really loud music, and hangs out in a hammock?
Yeah, they like tape down the center of Picard's quarters so that this is my side and that's your side. I'm not responsible.
Look, dude, don't touch my knives, all right?
I had a college roommate like that.
He touched your knives?
Yeah, I was not cool with it.
He was into jam bands?
I had a college roommate who was like, he was like literally, and I shit you not, doing everything he could to model his life on Kevin Smith and the characters in Kevin Smith movies. Like, he dressed like
a lot of hockey jerseys.
He dressed like Kevin Smith. Like, he only watched like Mallrats and Clerks and the like, you know, the Jersey series, and obsessively replayed PlayStation games and read comic books, and like he had a girlfriend who would come over and he would play like old time beige Game Boy, and she would just sit and like rest her chin on his shoulder and watch him play Game Boy.
Oh no.
It was very creepy.
That was their foreplay?
It was like not foreplay though, because it was like, it was a very like chaste relationship. It was very strange.
I had the opposite roommate my first year in college, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
My first college roommate had all the sex.
Really?
Just a ton of it. Just like my doorknob was covered in socks.
Wow.
All the socks.
I didn't know you could pile socks on a door.
The doorknob was covered with so many socks, you'd have to cut the socks to fit more socks over the socks that were already there.
A Gordian sock.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first year.
Yeah. I did not not do much sex in college, personally speaking. Nobody was interested.
Yeah, I thought I would really bloom in college.
Nope.
Turned out it was post-college.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, this has been good therapy.
Yeah, a little bit cathartic, a little bit embarrassing. Kind of like...
If anyone would like to support the show, they can go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
We turned out okay.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So Picard has this hang with Jono in the kind of spare quarters that Jono has been issued. And he's like, well, I guess we've only got each other for this time being. How do you like the room? Everything comfortable? We can like bring you something. And it's a really like interesting character moment, because he's like, Picard is so uncomfortable that he's kind of being uncharacteristically deferent to a much lower status person.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great bit of writing.
Yeah.
And very well performed by Patrick Stewart. And he has to really talk through this with Troy a couple of times before he's comfortable. But he winds up going like, okay, Jono, like, what are you used to? And Jono is like, I live with my captain. That's who I've always lived with. And Picard is like, all right, well, you can come to my quarters, I guess. And you can tell there's some trepidation there, because he doesn't want Jono to know about the GIMP. He doesn't have any way of like warning the GIMP or explaining the series of punishments that will be in place if the GIMP, you know, blows his cover or whatever. But they go into Picard's quarters, and Jono starts just kind of like picking everything up, all of his priceless antiques. Kind of reminded me of like when I was a kid and like we'd go over to the house of friends of my parents who were like a gay couple that didn't have kids or whatever. And so they had like breakable things on low tables. And as a kid, you're like, holy shit, I cannot believe there's a breakable thing within my reach.
This bottle collection is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, you have a white carpet? How interesting. Let me find a way to spill a plastic cup full of orange juice on that.
Picard has not child-proofed his apartment in any way.
No.
And there's a little bit of a head fake foreshadowing here, because his entire condo is made of glass tables.
Yeah.
I'm expecting some shit to go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's some build-up without payoff in the glass table department. I hope that's not a spoiler for anyone.
Yeah, well, there's payoff in the knife department. They definitely followed the Chekhov rule of, if there's a Klingon ceremonial knife on the desk in Act 1, etc., etc. But the GIMP doesn't bang against the side of the box. Cover successfully maintained. And... that's how they're gonna hang for the rest of it. And these scenes get kind of emotional. Like, Picard will show Jono like an iPad with a bunch of photos of his parents, and like him as a baby. And it becomes clear that he's like not actually over the violent deaths that his parents suffered, and like, in fact, is fairly crippled by post-traumatic stress syndrome.
I don't know, Ben. Maybe you know someone who has this, which will make my comment sound totally idiotic. But do survivors of post-traumatic stress have a difficult time recognizing that in other people? Because Jono's giving off all the signs, and Picard is just not... He's not understanding that this kid is really going through some of that shit.
Yeah.
Instead, he sort of takes the tack towards humanizing him. There's a little bit of manipulation involved. He shows him the pictures. They do some bonding by playing some space racquetball. They have that communication from Admiral Werther.
Yeah.
And then they have, like, banana splits and 10 forward with Wesley.
The boy.
Yeah. Wesley's big bukkake scene.
Yeah, and all of this is about manipulating him into remembering that he's human. At no point is a mirror produced, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, they try to get him to cop to his humanity so that when they meet up with the Talarians, he's going to choose Team Human instead of Team Talarian.
Yeah, and it's a very weird choice that they make, because so it's partly motivated by the fact that Dr. Crusher's examination of him has turned up evidence of lots of fairly substantial injuries in his past. And, you know, to the pampered Federation citizens, these, like, all they can think is this is abuse. So they're like, well, we got to get him out of this horrible environment. You know, he's just a kid. Like, what is he, like, probably 16 or something?
Yeah, thereabouts.
But on the other hand, they're like, well, he's also like a born Federation citizen. And if the Talarians had followed like appropriate interspecies communication protocols, they would have been like, hey, we found this kid. You want him back? And the Federation would have come and collected him. But they didn't. And so they feel like there's been an injustice here. And so their whole goal is to kind of soft play this sales pitch that they're gonna lay on Jono, which is like, drop this Talarian shit, you're coming with us, essentially.
Right.
As wrongheaded as it winds up being, I found that believable. I bought that these kinds of people would come to these conclusions under these circumstances. Did you?
I mean, where I'm a little bit squishy on whether or not it worked for me, your case is more convincing than maybe the show is. Like, I don't want to skip too far ahead, but like, the Federation and Picard himself really moralizes this decision. Like, the kid's clearly abused. We've got to save him. He's basically been kidnapped by these Talarians. There is no way that we are wrong about this one. Like, we're going to convince the Talarians to give him up. He's going to stay with us, and that's going to be a successful mission.
Right. But
what,
I think that...
what they fail to recognize is that they might be wrong about the circumstances of his injuries. They might be wrong about where his allegiances lie. It might be a totally benign situation that has placed Jono in his adoptive father's care.
Right, but I think that's
just
like,
assume so much.
That's what the episode is about, is like their hubris around this set of choices, is they are sitting in this fucking fancy starship that is, you know, like, three Talarian warships are no match for their luxury cruise liner, and they're sitting up in their ivory tower making these kind of these decisions. You know, they don't talk to Jono about it. They don't. And Picard's monologue at the end is kind of about that, is about how they like completely missed the facts on this one and completely were trying to serve interests that don't actually exist.
Yeah. I think it's great that their moralizing is proven wrong. Like this is a concept that seems totally impossible in season one, where their moralizing was drenched thick and rich
all over
every script. Like,
yeah,
this shows how sophisticated they've become as writers.
And it's like, yeah, our friend Scott McNulty of the Random Trek podcast often cites original series Kirk as like, show up at a planet, tell them what's wrong with their society, and leave.
I come swinging the olive branch of peace.
I think that is very true of the original series, at least the episodes of it that I have suffered through. And this is a different thing. Like, and it was, I think it's pretty sophisticated by comparison. Like, this felt more like a play in a way than some previous episodes. Like it felt kind of literary in a weird way.
Well, it's definitely deep in the bottle. Like, it's a very thick glass bottle for sure.
Yeah. A bottle with a proscenium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so they finally, like, Endar, the captain of the Tolarian warship, shows up and is... there's a bunch of scenes where Endar and Picard sort of debate what Jono's fate is going to be, and they, like, let Jono visit with Endar, and a lot of stuff goes down that is essentially serving the function of exposing Jono to this side of him that he has never been in touch with, which is the human Starfleet person that he potentially could have been had history been different. And it, like, is deeply incompatible with the warrior mindset that he's been raised in. Like, it is fucking his whole shit up. And he, like, has, like, breakdown after breakdown. Like, when they play racquetball, he, like, completely loses it, and it's, like, putting him back in the Tolarian attack on whatever Federation settlement he was originally kidnapped from.
Yeah, Jono goes, like, full Vineyard on the racquetball court, and Picard's like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
My love is a peeper, longing still for that which longer nurseth the disease.
And so, like, Picard is having a snooze one night in his glittering blanket.
He's getting pillow advice from Geordi, I noticed. Captain, you gotta try out this pillow. It is wildly uncomfortable.
Oh, really, Geordi?
Here's the thing. You don't want to get in too deep of a sleep. Otherwise, you can't ward off the raiders who are trying to stab you in the middle of the night.
Just so. I've taken a blade in my chest before, Geordi, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, this is clearly not a Casper pillow.
No. And it's not the one with that guy with the, like, Jesus piece that advertises him on late-night television.
I just want to turn toward the camera for a moment and say, Casper, we're here and we're ready.
I want to turn to the various mail order underpant and sock companies that advertise on lots of podcasts and say that, you know, I've been thinking it's about time for me to stock up on some new undergarments, and I am ready. So while Adam needs a thing that costs $1,000, I only need a thing that costs $5 or $10. Consider it. This all comes to a head when Jono comes into Captain Picard having his naparoo, and he's got the Klingon ceremonial knife, which I guess is probably from when Picard was Chadich to Worf.
Yeah.
That's my guess is what that's from. And there's a pretty, like...
That was his walking around knife when he was in the hood?
Yeah. When he was walking through the barrio on on Kronos.
Yeah.
And Jono, like, raises the knife over his head and attempts to plunge it into Picard's chest. And so he wakes up in Six Bay, and it turns out, like, this is a fairly minor injury. Like, Jono from his warrior race completely blew it on this murder stabbing.
Yeah, he's kind of a shitty warrior, isn't he?
Yeah, like, I guess maybe the possibility is that he didn't, he, like, intentionally didn't kill Picard, because his plan here was attacking a senior officer is punishable by death in his culture. And there's been a bunch of moments in the episode where he, like, assumed that something that was a rule in his culture would be a rule no matter what. Mm-hmm. And the women thing is an example of that, but this is another. Picard is in a bio bed with an arch, which, you know, that means it's fairly serious, but it's not like a full body arch, so it's not all that bad.
Yeah.
And Crusher is stitching him up, and so when the Talarians get back on FaceTime, Picard is not on the bridge and Riker is, and he has to be like, well, listen, Picard's not going to talk to you about this because your son decided to poke him with a knife, and the captain is pretty particular that only Nausicaans are allowed to poke him with a knife. And Endar, the Talarian captain, is like, this is fucking tragic, so I'm pissed enough that I'm going to start shooting at you guys. And the Talarian ships are, like, getting into battle formation very slowly enough for Picard to, like, get back into uniform and get up to the bridge and talk him down off the ledge. And yeah, he has this big monologue where he's like, yeah, we didn't consider what Jono wanted or what was right for him, like, cosmically. And, like, perhaps you didn't either, but, you know, I don't know how we can hold our morality against you when we've acted out of such hubris around this whole issue.
Yeah, and this is how they avert what would turn into war. I mean,
right.
Endar has made it pretty clear that unless they return Jono to him, he's ready to throw down.
Yeah.
And he's calling all cars to the situation.
Yeah.
And they're like, look, our weapons are no match for yours. We've got, like, Hood-style weaponry over here. And even though we know we're overmatched, like, we're ready to go to war for this guy out of principle. And by the end of the episode, when they return Jono, they have not only felt the satisfaction of doing the right thing by him, but they've also averted what would be a fucking bloodbath for the Talarians.
Right. Which is an interesting, that's such a Star Trek problem. Like, it's not an existential threat to the Enterprise, it's a moral threat to the Enterprise.
Right. Like, they've met people before who have wiped out entire races fairly easily, Ben.
Who's, like, who, for example?
That's incredibly tough to live with.
Oh, yeah? You're not dealing with it well, are you, Kevin?
There's only one way to cope with the sort of genocide that this episode came so close to.
What, if you know, somebody's listening and they've done something, I'm sure they would want to know how you have found a way to cope.
The only thing that cures what ails me is the comfort of a vinyl woman.
Oh, you're talking about a real doll.
I don't like how you've started interviewing Kevin. I liked it when you did Kevin with me. What happened to you, man?
I don't know. I kind of like talking to him.
It puts too much pressure on me and my very okay at best Kevin Uxbridge impression.
It's better than mine. Somebody said mine sounded like Homer Simpson.
God, I think mine started out like Richard Nixon, like in this episode. Ben, did you like this episode?
I really did. I think that you know, we've given it a good ribbon, and there's definitely some things about it that are not perfect, but I felt like the moral quandary that Picard thinks he is in being not the one he is in fact in is such an interesting idea. And I thought they did a great job of you know, playing with the idea that Picard thinks he is this, like, you know, rational, moral actor, and in fact, like, does have some blind spots, and his worldview didn't, like, serve him particularly well in this episode. like, at the end of the day, he does the right thing, and it just takes him a really long time to get there. And it's not through anything evil. It's just that he kind of misses the mark.
Picard is so capable in basically every area that his discomfort would make him incapable of dealing with the situation. Like, there are plenty of circumstances as a Starfleet captain that you're put in uncomfortable situations.
Right.
But when he's around children, he just falls apart.
Yeah. I feel like we all have things like that, you know?
Yeah. It's his bugaboo.
Absolutely. How about yourself? Did you enjoy this?
I did. You know, when Jono first comes on screen, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, we've got this. We couldn't get Jake, so we've got this other guy, Jake adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, like, this is going to be cartoonishly bad. And he starts doing the car alarm. And I'm like, this is not going to be good. I don't know if I can do another half an hour of this.
Yeah.
But it pretty quickly gets into some pretty heavy shit. And I dug it. There was a lot to laugh at and poke fun at, but the vein of honestly trying to deal with, how do you deal with a problem like Jono, I thought was pretty sophisticated for a show that has been pretty sloppy about stuff like this in the past.
Yeah. Hey, Adam, I'm perceiving through my telepathic abilities that there's a priority one message that we need to ingest. What do you say we check that out?
Yeah, let's ingest that, I guess.
This is all extemporaneous, folks. No scripts.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first and only priority one message is of a personal nature. It is to Sagan from his father, Kurt. It goes like this. To my newborn son, you are only a week and a half old, and I already know that you will boldly go where few have gone before. Much like your namesake, I hope you will grow up to love big ideas, science fiction, and whatever the 2030 equivalent is of a Star Trek podcast. Lots of love, Dad. Sagan is pretty much the coolest name ever, right?
Oh my god, I'm jealous forever.
Yeah.
Why didn't my stupid parents name me Sagan?
We have terrible names compared to this.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be 18 years before it's legally and morally acceptable for you to share this podcast with your son. But we hope he hears it one day. And welcome to the world, Sagan.
Yeah, I think you're going to turn out okay.
Yeah, your dad seems pretty cool.
Yeah, good one, Kurt.
If you would like to leave a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, and it is $200 for a commercial message. And that's all you need to know about that.
Ben?
Adam?
Did you find yourself a bratwurst-wrapped drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Drunk Shimoda!
How prescient of you to predict that my drunk Shimoda would be wrapped in brats. For indeed he was. My Shimoda is Captain Endar.
Captain Johnsonville?
Yeah. Oh, before I say why he's my Shimoda, I do want to talk about the fact that he got to come aboard with two guys who were toting assault rifles. It's like, why did they let those guys on board? Shouldn't they have to leave their fucking energy weapons on their ship?
Yeah. What was O'Brien doing in that scene? He really mailed that one in.
Yeah. Bad call, O'Brien. But Endar was my Shimoda because there's a scene where he comes on board and gets to like spend a quick moment with Jono, and like Picard and Troi just like turn and face the corner while they talk. And in this scene, Endar turns his head away from camera a little bit and exposed the fact that he had a super long rat tail.
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah, he has like a full 12 inches of rat tail hanging off the back of his already scrotumed up head.
I don't remember seeing this. Did he have the little like braces rubber bands wrapped around it, or was it like friendship bracelet woven? In what configuration was the rat tail?
It's hard to tell from my screen here. I think it's like a tight braid, maybe with some orthodontic rubber bands at the end.
Nice.
Yeah. Endar, you know, you thought Jono had peak 90s hair. Nope, it was Endar the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, it was a rat tail waiting in the weeds.
How about yourself? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Just to be clear, is your Shimoda the rat tail or is it Endar?
It's Endar.
For sporting one.
Endar made okay. a choice.
Okay.
Endar was looking in the floor-length mirror, and he's like, looking good, Endar. You know what? You know what would be kind of cool right about now?
You know what the kids are really into?
Who's your Shimoda?
My Shimoda is a scene-based Shimoda, and it's from this scene. Okay. Ben, I think it's really weird that Picard and Troi walk Jono into the conference room to meet up with his dad. And then 10 feet away, just kind of turn around for privacy. They like stand at parade rest with their backs turned. Yeah. That doesn't afford any privacy, guys.
No.
Like, I don't understand why they thought to do that. And what's weird is that they are blocked in the scene. Like, they are in between the two shot
yeah.
of Jono and his dad.
Yeah, they don't want you to ignore the fact that Picard and Troi are there.
It would have taken a 1 foot dolly move to just sort of crop them out of the scene. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as Jono sits down, I don't know why they didn't do that.
Hey, they were running out of time. They didn't want to have to like set the whole rail setup, you know?
It's sort of like a prison warden scene. Like when they bring a prisoner out to talk to someone through the glass.
Yeah.
It's that amount of privacy, which is to say none at all.
Yeah.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is episode 5, Remember Me. Wesley's experiment with warp fields results in the mysterious disappearance of the crew. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I remember really liking this episode. This is one of those episodes that if I get a chance and I'm just flipping through the eps, I will occasionally watch this one for fun.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
I like real weird Twilight Zone-y episodes, and this is one of them for me.
Well, I don't, so I'm going to veto.
Well, fuck you, because we're watching it.
Adam, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep burning vetoes. You insist?
Do you insist?
Fine, fuck you. You burned your veto. You did it again.
Why are you saying I'm burning my veto? You're the one that burned your veto first.
Because this episode is a turkey.
No, it's not. It is not.
It's a total turkey, Adam.
There's some caviar on this bird, Ben, and I want to watch it.
It's probably the second worst Dr. Crusher episode.
That's saying a lot. There are some real bad Crusher episodes. Is this on your Mount Armus?
I think it might be.
Is its depiction on Mount Armus something that should be there but isn't? Like it's just an empty spot.
Wow. I can't believe we're going to go for a season 4 with no fucking veto. It's getting to be a joke that we don't even want to do them.
People think that we pre-plan this shit, but we don't.
No.
That was a real shocker, Ben.
Well, I'm glad to keep it exciting, I guess.
Yeah. You know what else is exciting?
What's that?
Remember Me, the episode. You know, one thing that isn't disappearing without a trace, Ben, is our continued support that flows in from our viewers.
We have almost 300 people contributing to our MaximumFun.org/donate account. Which they're telling us is really terrific for a show that has not been through one of the pledge drives yet. So thank you so much to everybody that is helping us make the show.
The vibe of the emails that we get from Max Fun most of the time is, we're really surprised about your success.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely like bemused perplexity at the number of people that listen to the show.
Yeah, it's fun to talk to Jesse and have him take you seriously.
Yeah.
As a real program.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so go to that if you've got the means. We really appreciate it, and it helps us out in a big way. I don't want to guilt trip anybody, but I did recently get laid off from my job, and even the small amount that it winds up being is very much appreciated at the end of the month. So... I just want to extend a warm, warm thank you to donors. And I also want to thank the folks that have left iTunes reviews and left reviews elsewhere and written about how much they like our podcast on blogs and Reddit and Facebook and stuff. Like, any time I see somebody talking about how much they like the show in a public place, it just, like, it really warms my heart. It is such an honor to do this for you guys when you're out there singing its praises the way you do. So thanks all, and if you'd like to get involved, please consider leaving a review or bigging us up on your socials medias.
Or buying a t-shirt.
Yeah, you go to maxfunstore.com, you can cop that tee. Sell them like hotcakes.
We're already working on T-shirt 2, the sequel to the original.
Yeah. It should be ready around the holidays, it's looking like. So get ready for that, folks.
Yeah.
I think people are going to like this one. And we should thank Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea. Dark Materia makes the theme music of the program. Adam Ragusea makes the music you hear when we are reading Priority One messages, and we hugely appreciate the music that both of them made for our show. Dark Materia didn't even realize it was for our show, probably, when he was making it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Surprise!
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of The Next Generation and a episode of The Greatest Generation that probably shouldn't have ever existed in the first place.
An episode that our viewers will always remember. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you a quick underpants story?
Okay.
So as you and our viewers know, I was in Victorville for almost 3 weeks.
Yes.
And the thing is, when you've been hired as a one-man band production crew,
yes,
you got to keep your packing real light.
Like, yeah.
I basically went down with a bazooka tube tripod case,
mm-hmm.
A Pelican 1510 camera case, and an over-the-shoulder duffel bag. Not a roundie that Picard would have, like an actual duffel.
Yeah.
And knowing that it would be impossible to pack clothes for 3 weeks, I packed no clothes for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Instead, I bought underwear at Costco. 3 weeks worth of underwear at Costco.
Wow.
Let me tell you, I have no problems with the Kirkland brand of products. Mm-hmm. They're a fine product.
Yeah.
They make a fine pair of underwear. But I'm telling you, I would throw them all away for some underwear that had woven silver in them.
The maids at your hotel must have been so upset. Every day there's a new pair of tidy whities in the trash can.
It was terribly wasteful. And yet there was nothing I could do. Like, there's no packing that amount of clothing for a trip like this.
You're not gonna go down to the FedEx and stuff underpants in a box and ship them back to yourself.
That was actually a bit of tour advice. Friend of the show, John Roderick, has told me about that.
Oh no!
You go out on tours with bands.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wanna spend a half a day in a laundromat.
No.
Just buy some underwear. Then you're rolling around with new underwear all the time. Oh, it's great.
That's pretty. It's pretty good. You just build that into the budget. That's an underpants line item.
You do not want to invoice too specifically when you're buying underwear in quantities of 21.
Yeah, they call because of producers wanting to cut things from line items, clothespins, which are very useful things to have on film sets, are usually called C-47s on a budget.
Yeah.
And it's like the idea is it sounds important, so a tenacious, cost-cutting producer won't cut it out because they won't know what it is and they won't want to risk it.
Yeah.
Underpants. Maybe that's a C-48.
Yeah. Those BVD 77s, forget it. Got to keep them.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.